Yeah, that's right. Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 27th, 9:05 a.m. There is a mistake on the agenda. It has been corrected through email. The address for our location is incorrect. But as I see people here today, they must have received the correction. And I'm being told we are not a legally bound advisory board. So we can continue this meeting.
Oh, we are legal. We are Brown Law Act compliant. It's because we don't have any decision made here as a recommendation and not a policy decision.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Due to the items on the agenda, we are not legally bound today, so we can continue as scheduled. Would you like to call roll?
Yes. Bruce McGowan. Greg Sonner.
Here.
Samantha Lewis.
Here.
Evan Markey.
Here.
Joanne Parsley?
Here.
Susan Trader?
Here.
Patrick Riley?
Here.
Todd Green?
Here.
And I would like to note that Ann Dawson and Holly Stone are absent today.
I would like to move on to item number two, business from the floor. The Public and Stakeholder Advisory Committee members have had an opportunity to comment on items not on the agenda and that are relevant to the SHAC. Committee members and management committee staff are not required to respond to any issues raised during the public comment period. Commenters are asked to respect differing perspectives and keep remarks within 3 minutes. Do we have any business from the floor? Take one, please go to the podium, state your name, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Name is James Brodeck. I served on the SHAC representing the environmental community during the planning process. The DWR statement of findings regarding the approval of the Rhino GSA notice that, quote, considering the GSA is choosing to manage the subbasin below historic lows, understanding how to propose minimum thresholds for the chronic lowering of groundwater management impact sustainability indicators will be important during plant implementation.
They follow those top orders with them.
The Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency created the plan and did not bestow the Chico Urban Forest and the non-riparian open woodlands with groundwater dependent ecosystem status. It should be protected under SIGMA. The resulting plan allows aquifer level operating thresholds to fall below the rooting depth of these terrestrial treasures. While SIGMA does not include these forests, the record shows that the public has voiced strong support for raising the planned operating range to protect the county. Unfortunately, the plan discounted the concerns of the environmental community and others voiced during the SHAC and board meetings by excluding most native oak woodlands and the locally valued groundwater dependent urban forest. In signing SIGMA, then Governor Jerry Brown emphasized that, quote, groundwater management in California is best accomplished locally. The Senate bill that created SIGMA said, quote, a groundwater sustainability agency has and may use the powers to provide the maximum degree of local control and flexibility consistent with the sustainability goals, unquote. While staff and consultants refused to include urban forest as groundwater dependent ecosystems, the public has voiced strong support for raising the planned operating range to protect the trees and the numerous environmental services that the urban forest provides us. The VSP recognized that, quote, potential impacts identified by stakeholders were disruption to GDEs and degradation of urban forest habitat in the city water table depth, dropping below the maximum rooting depth of valley oak and other deep-rooted species, unquote. In a recent letter from Richie Bamlett, Chico Urban Forester to the Indiana Department of Water Resource and Conservation, quote, if the urban forest is not properly recognized in relation to GDEs, its needs will not be considered when evaluating significant and unreasonable impacts to environmental beneficial users, a core SIGMA requirement. I bring this up because While inundation, surface water and groundwater is very important, it is not the only parameter that we should be considering when we're talking about groundwater dependent ecosystems. If we protect groundwater dependent ecosystems, such as valley oak trees that have a living depth as low as 8 feet, we're going to protect development wells, we're going to protect the urban forests. And going to protect what's left of our non-impairing value of groups. Thanks for taking my time.
Thank you. Are there any additional comments from the board? From chat? Seeing none, I'd like to move on to item number 3, review and approval of the April 22nd Shad meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Open to discussion. Seeing none, would you please tell me?
Greg Sonnen?
Aye.
Samantha Lewis?
Aye.
Evan Markey?
Aye.
Joanne Parsley?
Aye.
Susan Schrader?
Aye.
Patrick Gurley, Todd Green.
Aye.
Thank you. Moving on, item number 4, consideration of groundwater sustainability plan amendments to the land subsidence sustainable management criteria in response to the Department of Water Resources recommended corrective actions. Staff will present an overview of draft proposed amendments related to the land subsidence monitoring network and SMC as provided in the attached memo for draft input and potential recommendation. And please welcome Christina Huff, Assistant Director of the Grandy Water Resources.
It's working. Everything is working. Good morning. Christina Buck, Assistant Director of Butte County Water and Resource Conservation, and providing technical staff support to the Vina GSA as we move through periodic evaluation work. I passed around to you this Sigma acronym guide. So just if you didn't grab one of these, have bookmarks in the back. Lots of acronyms in these slides, so have that handy. I'll try to use real words as well, but just wanted to throw that out there. So today, the first item is for consideration is related to land subsidence. We'll just jump right in. You have these slides are printed. If there's some hard copies in the back, the SHAC members have one, and it's all information that was in your memo that was in your packet. So we're just working through the information that you had available to you. As you know, as I just said, you were working through the periodic evaluation process, which is really centered on responding to recommended corrective actions that the Vina Subbasin received from DWR. Land subsidence was one of those. So they had some specific recommendations in Vina's determination letter, but they've also since, the Department of Water Resources has since released a best management practices document. That's one of their higher levels of kind of guidance on a topic related to sustainable management. And that has outlined pretty specifically kind of what they expect to see under different types of land subsidence scenarios in terms of GSP kind of sustainable management criteria. So what we are asking you to do today is review the proposed amendments that were in your packet, provide comments or input on the content itself, and also on kind of this approach to addressing the RCAs from the Department of Water Resources. So first, the good news, we have not observed or experienced measured land subsidence due to groundwater pumping conditions in the Vina Subbasin. So this is just a map out of the last annual report that shows the NSAR data showing no land subsidence over the subbasin, kind of within that measurement error of 0.1 feet per year or 0.1 feet. So that's the good news. We're not addressing an impact related to this, but it's one of the 6 sustainability criteria that needs to be addressed and criteria need to be set for as an indicator of sustainability for groundwater management. So that's why we're tackling it. So the Department of Water Resources set out their expectations. Here's just the verbatim language under number 1 and 2 of those recommended corrective actions. They wanted to see, provide a clear quantitative definition of when undesirable results for land subsidence may occur in the subbasin as required by the GSP regulations to support the selection of land subsidence minimum thresholds that demonstrate avoidance of undesirable results, and number two, establish sustainable management criteria, which that SMC, right, encapsulates MT, MO, minimum threshold, measurable objective, the RMS network, that's all part of the SMC. For land subsidence for the subbasin, utilizing a monitoring network that directly measures land elevation change, such as remote sensing data, survey monuments, and global positioning system stations. So that was DWR's specific VINA input. And then, as I mentioned, they have this best management practice scenario or document, and it describes a couple different scenarios. VINA subbasin essentially falls into scenario two that they describe, which is a subbasin that has experienced little or no subsidence, but groundwater levels may be allowed to decline below historical lows based on how MTs, groundwater level MTs are set. And so monitoring SMCs should identify conditions that could lead to significant and unreasonable impacts. So that's where we're kind of at, is like VINA should set SMC based on change in land surface because of that kind of position that subbasin is in. Okay, so on April 24th, the VINA GSA released what we're calling strawman proposal. Strawman proposal is a proposal meant to be kind of poked at and kicked around, and it can change, right, based on input. And so it's like a reasonable starting point for discussion that can then morph as needed and be considered kind of in the next iteration. So the strawman was released at the end of April. We had a public discussion session here on May 7th with a handful of folks in person and online that had a good discussion about different aspects of the strawman. And as a result of that and written comments that were received, a few kind of focused changes occurred, which is now reflected in what you had in your packet today. But they centered around clarifying the uncertainty piece. There was a range before. So this point one is what we see in DWR's documents and kind of across the board. So clarifying that, really honing in on clarifying causation between land subsidence to declining groundwater levels, simplifying down to a 5-year cumulative MT and not having an annual rate as well. And then really making sure to pair INSAR data, which is the satellite data that tells us how the land surface is changing, with that well groundwater level data. And that was in the straw man as well, but the proposal you have now has a map and list of wells and just more details around what that might look like. Okay, the neighboring, just awareness of our neighbors is helpful and also informed some of these revisions. So the cumulative MT approach is used, or that same approach is in the Red Bluff, Las Molinas, Corning Butte subbasin. It's like, which computer is it coming from? subbasin GSPs. Get rid of that so I can see better. And so there's similar framing as our neighbors in the proposal that you're seeing today. The INSAR network is used across these subbasins, and they're using direct surface monitoring, often paired with groundwater level RMS wells, as you see in this proposal. There's good causation language in their GSPs, really tying it to declining groundwater levels and infrastructure impacts. And then CALUSA is different and has a distinction and includes kind of an aerial aspect as well. They are the only subbasin in the Sac Valley that have observed subsidence occurring annually. So VINA does not, as we talked about. Okay, so just to orient you again to what's currently in the 2022 VINA GSP and what's in the proposed amendment. So across the board for monitoring in the 22 GSP groundwater level network. So again, there's six, really five for us, sustainability indicators, right? They can potentially each have a different monitoring network and different SMCs. So there's groundwater levels, water quality, storage, interconnected surface water, land subsidence. So right now in the GSP, the land subsidence monitoring points to and hangs on the groundwater level network as a proxy and kind of all of its parts. So the sustainable management criteria for groundwater levels are used, including minimum threshold and undesirable results. So this is kind of pulling that apart, letting groundwater level stand on its own and establishing distinct criteria and monitoring for land subsidence based on DWR direction and input. So monitoring would be all of the NSAR data across the subbasin. There's also one global positioning system station in Vina that can provide, I think it's around the Chico area. So that's kind of the broad network. We can use all of that data to keep track of what's kind of going across the subbasin. The RMS, however, is then your representative monitoring sites. Your RMS network is the network of locations or wells that have compliance criteria associated with them. So there can be a broad network that gives you broader information and then your compliance network. So the RMS NSAR clusters are near wells. So the RMS network would say, okay, we have a network of wells, and the NSAR pixels, which are like 2.5 acres each, 9 pixels around that well, that's going to be your compliance point. And there's a network of wells across the subbasin. So that's the proposed monitoring. And then switching to a direct land surface sustainable management criteria, we'll look at that, the minimum threshold and the undesirable result. So the takeaway here is that the proposal retains groundwater levels as context for causation information, kind of tying that NSAR data to locations where we have groundwater level information, but no longer relies on the groundwater levels as a proxy, the groundwater level SMC as a proxy. Okay, so here's the nuts and bolts of what's of these different criteria. The measurement, the measurable objective, that's the MO, says it should be zero, right? We have zero now. Our goal is zero land subsidence into the future, recognizing uncertainty, right? It might be within that measurement uncertainty. The minimum threshold is set to 0.5 foot, 0.5 feet, cumulative subsidence over a 5-year period at the same location as a result of declining groundwater levels. So that's the MT trigger, is if we saw 0.5 foot of subsidence over a 5-year period. There's no interim milestone because we're already having zero subsidence. Our goal is just keep that the same, so we don't need an interim milestone to get us there. The undesirable result is the MT exceedance at the same representative location for 2 consecutive years with confirmed infrastructure impacts and declining groundwater levels. So this ties in the causation of declining groundwater levels. But there's other things that could potentially change land surface, right? And infrastructure impacts, which is really what DWR wants to see as well, as in terms of an undesirable result should have impacts associated. And then it acknowledges the uncertainty of the NSAR data. Okay, so that's just an overview, and we can come back to that for reference as needed. I described this a little bit already, the monitoring approach, right? It's having the broad network, which is all available NSAR data, one available GPS station, and we can look at that. It would be reported out in the annual reports for the entire subbasin each year. But the representative monitoring locations, this is your compliance network or RMS network, has 44 representative monitoring locations. Each is a well, basically a groundwater level monitoring well, and then the 9-pixel cluster around that. And we've already kind of talked about why we want to pair with this, right? And ground that in the causation. All right, so here's what that network looks like. So hard to see, very hard to see on the screen up here, but in your packet, there's the yellow dots kind of throughout the subbasin. As you know, we have a lot of groundwater level monitoring locations. Those are essentially the broad network of the groundwater level sustainable management criteria or indicator. And then, like I said, it grabs the 9 pixels around each of those ones. So pretty good spatial distribution. You're interested in spatial distribution. What are the infrastructure that we're concerned about, right? Highway 99, 32, wells throughout the subbasin could be impacted. So we want kind of good distribution across the subbasin to also tie into those potential infrastructure. Okay, so that's the overview of what you had in your packet. And today, again, just an opportunity for your discussion, input, any adjustments to the potential amendments, and a potential recommendation to the board. As you saw, this is essentially written, like looking at the sections of the GSP, there are new sections that would either replace that numbered section in the GSP Or in one or two cases, it's a new section because it wasn't there before. And so if the boards approve this amendment, those changes to the GSP would be inserted and then the GSP would be adopted again. So stop there, yeah.
So, and then this GSP is going to be part of the next plan going forward in 5 years, apply for other grant money. It's not that we have to be based on that.
Exactly. So this is, so there's one GSP and this, a 2020, what year are we in? Six, adopted GSP would have this content instead of what the 2022 has for land subsidence.
And is there like cost for an issue?
To amend the GSP or to just do these things?
Like
yeah.
Putting in different.
Okay. Yeah. Good question. No, there. I would say there's no new cost associated with this. I know because NSAR data is provided for free by the Department of Water Resources, so that's your land surface change data set, and then these monitoring wells. Are existing
yeah.
and have data collected from them. I do think that there's an opportunity to make sure that the monitoring wells are ones that we can get. There's some new wells in the broad network potentially that have been pulled in. And so we'd wanna make sure that we can get data ongoing from all of those wells that we list. But that's the idea.
So with somebody who's doing our monitoring now with that corporation, with that office.
Yeah, currently the Department of Water Resources does some of that monitoring. Our department helps with some of that, and the GSA is installing new wells and are outfitting those with data loggers, and so there is some cost potentially to the GSA of those new wells that are being monitored.
Then another thing it says here, undesirable results. Infrastructure impacts. What would that mean?
Yeah, so if, I mean, what you're seeing in San Joaquin as an example, or Tulare Basin, right, where they're experiencing significant subsidence, is canals. Because the land surface changes, canals are now not flowing the way they should, or roads are damaged. So those are the infrastructure, and there's some of them listed, right? Roads, canals, irrigation infrastructure, wells, wellheads can be damaged.
So that we can all take turns.
Yeah,
and
great
questions.
Table one.
Yeah.
With the that's in our packet. I didn't see that on your slides.
Yeah, I didn't include it.
And when did table one?
Page 17.
Page 17 and 18. When did this table come about? And if we put this in the GSP, are we stuck with this? I mean, has there been time to analyze this by all the parties interested?
I think this is part of the process. So this is the time to analyze it. It's a good time to analyze it. I think right now, these are all the wells. Okay, this includes wells from a couple of different sources. It includes wells that we've been monitoring for a long time in Vina. And then it includes, which includes a few Cal Water wells. And then it does include some new wells that are from other programs, like the nitrate compliance monitoring program in the city of Chico, or Department of Toxic Substance Control that has some shallow wells. So this list is what could be a broad network of groundwater level wells, which means there are wells that are in the subbasin that provide groundwater level data. But to your point, this list could be further refined, or we could have a discussion about it.
Well, I just, you know, I'm not up on this enough to know, do we need that many wells? Or is this just something that this is what we'd like to have? Do we need that many to basically adhere to Sigma laws? Or are we going way over there?
I would say that's a board decision. There's not like good guidance necessarily, specific guidance on like where that threshold is. I think the idea of the proposal here that you're looking at is where you have groundwater level data, we'll look at the NSAR data that's associated with that location. So that's what it's.
Yeah, I just didn't want to make this thing so big that it's so costly.
Well, it's not. Yeah. And I would say from a cost standpoint, I think where there is a little bit of uncertainty is on those wells that that are other monitoring program wells. There's like six of them, maybe. Whether we can get a data logger in there, whether we want to add them to the network. We're going to have this same conversation. Okay, so one way to look at this is we're going to have the same conversation when we talk about the groundwater level sustainability indicator. So one thought that I was having as I was putting this together was, do we have that conversation under that sustainability indicator, and we just tie this to that? So however that shakes out, we say the land subsidence monitoring network is going to be the broad network of the, or the RMS network of the groundwater level. And then we can have a more detailed conversation on what set of wells that is. But it makes some sense to me that the land subsidence would kind of hang on that and not be like a new list or a different list. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What my concern is with the people that are funding this, the landowners, et cetera, if we keep adding stuff that's not necessarily needed to comply with the law, it's just driving our costs up.
Yeah.
So that's my concern with a lot of this stuff.
Well, I might be reading it wrong, but you need 2 consecutive years to spur the undesired results of the same location with groundwater level decline, right? And the infrastructure to set on. So what if a NSAR data has pixels showing some subsidence and we don't have a monitoring well nearby?
I think we would start to ask questions, right? So if let's say a red spot shows up not in one of these compliance locations, then I think we start to go ask around, be like, are you observing? You know, did someone plow a field? Or did, are you observing anything? Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm wondering, because the regulation, or not, the print is going to say it's not going to trigger anything because there's no groundwater, there's no proof of groundwater decline in that area. If we didn't have it, basically, you're going to lock us out of places that might be experiencing subsidence, but we don't have it.
I mean, I think that's an argument for having good distribution of groundwater. Like, we have good distribution of groundwater level data, whether it's a compliance point or not, right? Like, we can look at the available groundwater level data that we have and say, are we hitting new historical lows? Are there declines? Sure. Could it be caused? So,
I just see, because when you look at Calusa, you look at the bullseyes, you can fit a number of bullseyes in our sub-basin that don't have monitoring.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that happens is that the monitoring network can change without amendments, really. Yeah. So if we started to see something light up, we might say, hey, let's start monitoring there. You know, we can change this monitoring network and adjust.
Yeah, we don't have to wait 5 years to add something. If we see something in year two years from now, a red thing pulls up, then we're going to have a discussion like, what are we going to do out there to help it? And if it's 2 consecutive years, then we need to do something before. We're not going to wait 5 years to the periodic evaluation to talk about it.
Yeah. So there's flexibility.
Yeah, I guess I just want to understand the half a foot of cumulative subsidence over the 5-year period. Is that if it happens in a single, that's still triggered and it's combined. That's still true. It does, because we have a lasting reality. It doesn't have to sustain over that 5-year period.
Right. Yeah, so you're basically always looking at a 5-year period for NSAR. So 26 compared to 2021, 27 compared to 2022. So it could happen in 1 year and then you hit it, or you could creep into it and it wouldn't be a surprise to us, right? Because we'd start like, we haven't hit our trigger, but we need to maybe monitor. Okay.
Okay.
This is presenting 44. I don't think we need more than 44. I think 44 is good coverage. We have
adding on.
Yeah.
The ones we're adding on.
The six new ones. The six new ones, essentially.
Yeah, it seems like we have 44. Every day at least. It's kind of.
And like I would suggest on the well piece, and you guys can decide what you want to, you can decide, but what I would suggest is let's tie it somehow to the groundwater level network. And then we can really dig into what that network is.
I just want to just find a way. I thought you could say earlier that it wasn't from the product. Investment that we have a lot of spending.
Yeah, these data sets are
the more data we have, the more much we can do it without extra costs.
We've been asked today to provide recommendations on the comment on the content that has been presented. I personally would really appreciate seeing exactly what DWR's request of us was, the April straw man proposal, and then what has been added to it, only because I really hesitate becoming a legislative body here. We are an advisory body to an agency that has been tasked with certain directive, and it's not up to the public for discussions to make the legislative decisions. That's supposed to come from above. And so it would help me if I saw those three things on the side by side in order to provide content.
So the three things, DWR's input.
Yes.
So that's in the memo.
Okay.
And right here.
Yeah. And then the April straw man.
April straw man was linked and then on the website.
Yeah. But then what you are like.
And then what changed.
Yeah. That would help, I think.
So this is kind of the summary of that. And I would say from the straw man to the what you have in your memo, it got more specific, right? Okay. So now you can really see like this is the language that would go in the GSP. And the straw man wasn't written quite like that. It was almost written like that, but not quite. So these are the five main things that changed. The straw man said the uncertainty was 0.05 to 0.1. Now we're just saying the uncertainty is 0.1. The straw man had language around causation, but what you have about groundwater level pumping being the cause, but what you have before you has that kind of like threaded throughout. So that's really clear. The straw man had both a annual rate of like 0.1 per year for MT and a cumulative 5 year 0.5 over 5 years. And so there was good public discussion and looking at our neighboring sub-basins to say, we need the annual rate and a 5 year, why would we do that? And some of the conclusions that came out of that was Occlusa has that, I believe. And it kind of makes sense for them because they're having annual subsidence. So for them to, have a trigger of what their actual annual rate is. And the other discussion around that piece was we're trying to set a trigger that's meaningful, but doesn't go off inadvertently, right? With either elastic conditions, because things change, or noise in the data. So that's kind of where we landed on the 5 year, and it's consistent with what our neighbors have done. And then the NSAR wells, the wells, the specific network, and what that looks like on the map, that is, that was not
answered. Did that answer help anyone kind of understand what you're doing?
Page 20 and 21.
Yeah. So does that help everyone? I'd like to move on to public discussion now, if that's okay. And then we can come back to this as the SHAG based on what the SHAG has to say. That's not good? Okay. We are opening this to questions from the public. Please raise your hand and then you can come in and give it to the I see one person.
So I think I know we did receive one. I know it's actually from Jim. We did receive one online comment about subsidence that is in the
pack. Are you going to be reading that?
You sent it last night?
Oh, last night.
No, I won't
read it. Okay, great. Introduce yourself for the people in the internet.
Hey, my name is James Bierbeck. July of 2023, the Department of Water Resources issued a statement of findings regarding the approval of the final groundwater sustainability plan. On page 31, they said, quote, department staff note that while undesirable results related to land subsidence have not occurred in the past, there is a potential to occur undesirable results in the future, given the GSA's proposed management strategy to lower groundwater levels below historic lows. They went on to say department staff conclude that the use of groundwater level as a proxy for land subsidence is inappropriate because of GSA's plan to allow continued lowering of groundwater level. Therefore, department staff recommend that the GSA has established sustainable management criteria for land subsidence utilizing a monitoring network that directly measures land elevation change, such as remote sensing data, survey monuments, and global positioning and system stations. So it's my understanding that we do plan to include these remote sensing and be more accurate measuring subsidence directly as per the DWR recommendations. And then to follow up if we see any problems to find wells in that location and find out if one or the other is declined. But I think it's really important to be aware of the DWR findings regarding the approval of the GSP. It's a very important document. It gives the recommendations and comments on the final plan.
Thank you.
And
can we do the previous slide just so I can so the straw man meeting
Please state your name.
Chief Judy, local farmer, working community lines with family farmers, working on signal related issues. So I was at the straw man meeting that we did here a couple weeks ago. And just kind of wanted to like kind of backfill and talk through some of the logic behind this. Okay, so starting from the top, that 0.1 foot, that's like potential aberration in data. So like we talked about rice farmers move a lot around dirt, and so that can change. We also talked about if something happens that's not water related, like a seismic change, how are we gonna relate that back to the data, kind of what Todd was talking about, like, if we have missing regions in the data, like regionally, how are we going to relate that to water necessarily? I still struggle with the half foot point. I feel like there might be somewhere in between. If I were to lose a half foot in elevation at my farm, the wellhead could potentially crack, slab around it could certainly crack. And so to say that a half foot is an acceptable range could mean serious implications for small growers. Also in that the 5-year cumulative, I struggle with that as well, because if we get like a, you know, say like 0.3 foot drop over 3 years, we see nothing. And then there's another 0.3 drop. We lose that data set from before, and that becomes forgivable in some way. And so I kind of struggle with that. And, you know, like for a lot of the groundwater stuff, we're looking at, you know, 0.4-year range. And, you know, it's not unacceptable to take the long-term look at this. We're talking about 2040, right? So I think having a more long-term time frame for this is not an acceptable And to kind of circle back around to, so the NSTAR data is free to us, is what I'm gathering. And so that's not an added expense. The monitoring network now is like pretty robust. And so it's just linking those things together. So it's just going to be like time and labor, like link these things together and make it work, right? I'll stop. But it just seems like it's not heavy lifting compared to a lot that's been done already. Thank you, staff.
Mm-hmm. And remind Chad that we are here to provide recommendations. They split our action into two parts where we provide recommendations on the action content and then whether to amend the GSP for the presented content. So to help guide the discussion, were there any additional questions that arose based on the public comment?
The only thing I would say, which I was going to bring up, was pumping of water is not the only reason for land subsidence. So, but you don't see that anywhere in any of this stuff that I can see.
There is a note on there. So, like when it says, and I'm kind of just going off the top of my head, Christina, feel free to correct me here. It's any kind of subsidence caused by lowering groundwater levels. So, if there was like an earthquake, because that can cause subsidence, that's not something we can control. So, in there, it does say subsidence caused by lowering groundwater levels. Is that right, Christina? Yeah, got it.
Okay.
That's the causation language that Christina was referring to.
Yeah. So there is boilerplate in the content. Any other? Okay. Oh, I had a question. yeah, that's a good question about seismic activity. I mean, do we have any data of what levels were before last and blue last? No, I didn't think so. That was a long time ago. Yeah, but you know, it's possible for it to do that again in our lifetimes. At least it comes up on April 1st every year.
It's alive. That volcano.
It is alive. All right. So, based on our discussion today, does staff have enough information to go back to the board on the actual content portion of your request?
So, do you want to make a recommendation? I think one of the pieces was the monitoring network and kind of what wells are chosen. Do you want to make a recommendation on that? Do you want to leave that staff to kind of bring forward to them in terms of?
Well, we had some comments about the cost feasibility of that and then
just familiarity with this list of wells.
Correct. Seemed to be the two things that came up.
Yeah.
Patrick, what else? Yeah. The question?
And I apologize because I'm certainly with this, but does the Shack have responsibility to follow, as Mr. Sunray pointed out, exactly what the law requires? Or is there a greater charge that we're supposed to be following to do the best we can to address the issues? Is there a minimum and then there is a maximum, or is there just, it just is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is where local management, the idea of these are locally managed, there's discretion between in that space. And that's at the discretion of the Shack.
And it kind of sounds like it comes down to what's just been proven.
Right.
For our community. So that always seems to be where we kind of have a common interest there. That's a great question.
The monuments that I know there's ton of them in the counties. I thought we had quite a few ones on the ground. So we're using one. And how many did we have before?
Yeah, so two different things. There's GPS station that has continuous like measurements. Like you can go on there and see if there's a ground. So that's a GPS station. Then there's a network of GPS monuments
right.
that were historically measured a couple times. Yeah. So there, I don't know how many there are. There's a network of them throughout the Minnesota Basin. We've moved away from that because there's no funding from DWR or locally, I think, interest in measuring those on a regular basis. But they're out there if, you know, something popped up and we're like, we need to do some more monitoring on the ground.
Well, I am open to a motion today, either to recommend or to abstain from recommending today. There are lots of options there. So if someone would like to throw out a motion, if I get a second, we can discuss that.
I could go to accept the changes that are presented here to upgrade the GSP with regards to the and subsidies. I'm not sure how soon one of your phrases.
Do you want to identify a specific table and kind of slide? You could say as proposed by
like, are you recommending the proposed amended sections in total or on some variation?
Yeah, like on slide. Yeah.
Slide.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Page 15. Right.
Yeah. I think it's.
No, I think you're talking about slide 5, the shortened
the changes.
What was just presented today.
The changes to the building. I think it's important to. There's something that definitely improve what the GSP has right now by just relying solely on groundwater levels. You know, we've got to do something about that. And that, I think this accomplishes that.
All right, so does everyone understand his motion?
No.
Okay, repeat the motion. Yeah, okay,
what
page are you? I'm
sorry. It's on the slides.
But which, I mean,
page 3, slide 5.
So slide 5 is just highlighting, I would say like slide 8 is what's reflecting the of what's in appendix or is happening.
I'm having trouble. I cannot. Oh, here it is. Okay, so proposed nuts and bolts. All right.
Put forth a motion to accept the changes to that are presented on slide 7 on page 4 of the presentation slides. Slide 8, then, in order to update the 2022 GSP to include actual subsidence data rather than relying on ground data.
Okay,
right.
I have that motion.
Do I have a second? I do agree with what kind of Christina and Greg are saying. The land subsidence monitoring network should match whatever we ultimately need before it is the problem. I think we can manage two different things.
Yeah,
they should be the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a motion. I have a second with a friendly amendment. Todd, do you approve the second friendly amendment? Okay, so now we have a motion. Could you, staff, please repeat what you heard so we can verify that Todd.
I have a motion for to accept the changes that are presented on slide 8 in order to update the GSP SMCs for subsidence. And network and the proposed network to be linked to the groundwater levels network. Is that right?
Okay, great. And that includes the boilerplate language that Greg was concerned about?
Yes, because it's
okay, great. So open for discussion. This is when you have your option game to argue against or for the motion on the table.
Is this mean they're expanding the table one than what we already have?
It means that we'll figure out what that table looked like under groundwater levels, and then this will mirror that.
So table one can change.
Yeah.
People will have time to look at it.
Okay. All right. That makes you comfortable. Okay. Additional shack number input here so that everyone can be on the same page. All right. Seeing none, I'd like to call a vote.
Bruce, you don't get a vote on this one. My bad. Greg Sonner?
Yes.
Samantha Lewis?
Yes.
Evan Markey?
Yes.
Joanne Parsley?
Yes.
Susan Schrader?
Yes.
Patrick Riley?
Yes.
Todd Green?
Yes.
Great, moving on.
I'm going to switch a plug. Oh, I don't want to.
All right.
Dangerous.
Item five, consideration of the approach to addressing interconnected surface water in periodic evaluation in response to the Department of Water Resources recommended corrective actions. Staff will provide an overview of the strong end proposal for addressing interconnected surface water in the periodic evaluation. SHAC will discuss the approach and will provide a recommendation to the IDGSA board regarding the approach. Please join us again, Christine Buck, Assistant Director of the Butte County Water and Resource Conservation Department.
Just
heads up,
the presenters go out for just a
moment. But we're having technical difficulties for those people who are listening in.
Heading power. Okay, so this is our second big topic for today, and that's interconnected surface water. So we'll just dive in. I'm going to take some time to go over kind of some of the new information that's available relative to this topic, and we can talk about the straw man. So this interconnected surface water straw man proposal was released last Monday, so it's relatively new. On the street, and then we had a small webinar situation online discussion with a handful of folks about it as well, mostly question and answers, and I just kind of walked through the Larry Walker Associates Tech memo that describes some of their new information. I'm going to talk about it today too. So today I'll give you the high points of that new information, the straw man, and then you guys can talk about what you want to do from there. I would say just at the outset, and we can circle back to this, I haven't received written comments on the straw man on this one yet. And I expect to, I would say, from at least from AGUBC and maybe others. So I think there's still digestion happening of the specifics that are in this document. And so we may want to take that into consideration in terms of what you do today and your direction or recommendations as well. Okay, so again, what's the regulatory framework? DWR, when it comes to interconnected surface water, really focuses on estimating the location, timing, and quantity or volume of depletions of interconnected surface water caused by groundwater pumping. That's kind of the legislative directive. And then, as with the other sustainability indicators, you have to set up criteria, sustainable management criteria for the interconnected surface water ultimately. So what progress has been made? Larry Walker Associates, and over the last year and a half, really, right, there's been an evaluation of available shallow groundwater level data, identifying some new wells that provide good information on shallow groundwater conditions. There's been some data collection, modeling, and that's been written up now in this ISW tech memo. And we'll talk more about the kind of key take homes from that. And that information was not available during GSP 2022. Development and adoption, right? So we have some new information that we can decide what to do with. So you'll see today that there's been some good progress on the timing and the location piece, and the volume still has the most kind of question marks around it. So the straw man really takes kind of a middle of the road approach of demonstrating progress, but avoiding premature setting of SMC. And you'll see kind of how that Hands up. Okay, so first let's just orient us to what is interconnected surface water, right? So interconnected surface water, first of all, when we say surface water, we're talking about rivers, creeks, streams, right? Water on the surface, lakes. So interconnected surface water is where groundwater and these rivers or streams are connected. They can talk to each other and interact. Either you have a situation in which groundwater levels near the stream are higher and groundwater flows high to low, just like the stream does. The water moves from the groundwater system into the surface water or the stream. Or you have a situation in which groundwater levels are lower than the nearby stream. In that case, water is moving from the stream into the groundwater. And where this groundwater level is affects the dynamic of how much and when that stream loses water to the groundwater. So this is a recharge situation. Or they're disconnected. The water table is low enough that the stream bed is not interacting. And they're not talking to each other kind of hydrologically. And so this is a disconnected system. And in this case, groundwater management is not relevant to a disconnected stream, right? Because no matter what happens here, if you pump more groundwater, if you pump less groundwater, it's not affecting stream flows. So in a disconnected situation, sigma or groundwater management is irrelevant essentially to that surface water feature. Okay, so why does it matter? Under sigma, the key question is whether groundwater pumping causes depletions of interconnected surface water that significantly and unreasonably affect beneficial uses of surface water, right? Lots of regulatory legislative language there, but understand the system and then what potential impacts are there to beneficial users. Okay, so again, the Department of Water Resources in their determination letter to the VINA GSAs, they have a recommended corrective action related to this topic. And they recognize that estimating stream depletion is complex, but they expect progress by this first paragraph of evaluation. That is what we have heard from them. So again, there's these three pieces. Location, this is identifying and understanding where streams are connected, where they're losing, where they're gaining, or where they're disconnected. And so therefore that has to do with then your monitoring network, right? So if you're disconnected or if you're connected, it's gonna affect where you're paying attention. Timing, when are the streams connected or disconnected? How does that vary across time and across space? So understanding that piece. And then the volume or the quantity is what is the rate and volume of pumping induced depletion and when does it occur? So not just is the stream losing, because there's lots of pushes and pulls in the system that could cause a stream to gain or to lose, like climate, drought, recharge, but also pumping, right? So for sigma, it's the pumping piece that the GSA is responsible. And then taking that together, then how should interconnected surface water minimum thresholds, measurable objectives, management actions be set in light of those three pieces? Okay, so the current status is that the Department of Water Resources has not yet issued their guidance on this topic. They've been saying for like over a year that it's coming like this next quarter, and we still don't, it's not out yet. So the reality is we just don't have the guidance that they said that we should use to set SMC and to revisit this topic at it.
So we're really eventually going to be charged with document, not how much is in. I'm not sure.
I think both
groundwater could be the surface water.
That's relevant too. Yeah. So, yeah. Location, quantity, timing of interconnection. So it could be gaining or losing.
But they're only regulating what surface water is losing.
Not necessarily. Because I would say not necessarily. If it's gaining less and that's an impact, that and it's because of depletions of pumping, that's still in the realm of scenario. Okay, so this is wordy. I just put it here for reference in case we want to pull it back up. It was in your packet. This is verbatim DWR's language, right, to the VINA GSP. Again, I just wanted to highlight that these themes coming directly from DWR are about location, quantity, and timing, right? This is what they've asked us. Approaches to evaluate rate, timing, volume of depletions, and to help support establishing specific sustainable management criteria in the near future. This first one basically says, consider using our guidance
as appropriate and when available, so not yet available. Second one says continue to fill data gaps, collect additional monitoring data, implement the grant strategy, and define segments of interconnectivity and timing. I'm going to show you today kind of what some of the progress has been made on that. The third piece, prioritize collaborating and coordinating with local, state, and federal regulatory agencies. This is related to beneficial uses and users, and the GSA has begun to do that through interbasin coordination and other work, and there's more to do there. And then the fourth piece is clarifying the groundwater level monitoring sites that would be used for evaluation of petitions. Okay, so that's the directive from the Department of Water Resources. So I'll just walk through kind of what the notable progress has been that we can document to address what I just walked through. So new information really coming out of this data gap project that is SGMA funded, right? So in 2024, this work began. Larry Walker Associates is the lead consultant on this. And you've heard from them over this past year or more on different pieces as they've described the work that they've been doing. So out of that work has been an identification of a shallow wells, relevant, available, shallow monitoring wells that have historical, some degree of historical data. And this was kind of two part. It was looking at, let's say, the 79 Vina wells that we've been monitoring for a long time. And Todd Green and others looked at those in relation to the AEM helicopter kind of subsurface data and said, okay, which of these are relevant for telling us about the shallow zone of the aquifer system? So it was identification of those, and then identification of other programs, like I mentioned before, nitrate, DTSC, other programs that also have monitoring wells out there that might have, again, give us information on the shallow zone. And then the stream gauges. So there's that piece. And then in addition to that, you'll remember that a chunk of the money from this grant is being used to install new shallow monitoring wells. So those are data sets that we don't have. They're currently under construction, hopefully soon or now. And so we don't have data from those new wells yet, but we will in 5 years, right? So those are data sets that will be available to us. So we can demonstrate both analysis that's been done to improve our identification of wells that are relevant to this topic. New wells are being put in, and this is what that map looks like in terms of where are those wells and stream gauges as well, new stream gauges and existing stream gauges. Okay, so that's great. Then that shallow groundwater network and data set was used in a couple different ways to understand this connectivity question about the streams that we have in Vina. First, there's kind of multiple lines of evidence, and the tech memo that was not directly included in your packet, but it's linked on the Vina website, right? It looks like this, walks through kind of the details of what I'm going to give you the highlights of. So first, it describes the Butte Basin groundwater model, which was updated and extended to 2024. And it looks, again, does a similar analysis that is currently in the 2022 GSP and identifies reaches, right? We've got Pine Creek, Mud Creek, Big Chico Creek, Little Chico Creek, Butte Creek, and the Dry Creeks down here. So an analysis of whether they're losing all the time, they're mixed in time, gaining, losing some of the time, or whether they're always gaining. So blue is always gaining. That's the Sacramento River on the west side. And then you can see most of the other ones are yellow in the Butte Basin groundwater model, indicating that the model is indicating that they're disconnected, that they're losing all the time and they're never gaining. So they could be disconnected, but not necessarily, always losing them. So then the analysis looks at using this network of shallow wells and existing shallow data, and then using really specific LIDAR elevation data for these streams. It compares the elevation of the stream to the elevation of the shallow groundwater and says, is this stream at this location connected or disconnected based on those elevations? And that's what these maps look like. And I'll just, there's a couple of them for a couple different time periods. So the one on the left is 2015 snapshot. So these black dots are where we have groundwater, shallow groundwater data that was used to do this analysis. And then it's compared again to the elevation of the stream. So blue is connected more than, and then red is disconnected. So again, we see whether it's 2015 or 2025, we see a pretty similar pattern, right? Most of these streams and upstream upland areas are disconnected, and then floodplain area, Sac River, and Pine Creek, Rock Creek, that one's Rock Creek, Rock Creek and Mud Creek may be connected in these kind of floodplain areas. At least some of the time, maybe not all the time. We know they go dry, right? So they're not connected all the time because Rock Creek's dry in the summer. So it's not connected in the summer, right? So you can kind of think about what you see out there and whether you think it's connected or not. Okay, so this is again new information and helps us with that location piece, right? Where do we think things are connected and where are they disconnected? As well as the timing, like I just kind of talked about. And then the third piece that's in this tech memo describes some field sampling that they did. They took water samples from Big Chico Creek along different locations of the creek, as well as Butte Creek, and it's cool science stuff. They did radon evaluation. Groundwater is radon enriched because it's moving through soil. And so if you pull a water sample out of the creek and there's groundwater coming into the creek at that location, you would expect to see like a high level of radon. It off-gasses quickly. So if there's no radon in the water, then there's no water, groundwater kind of continuously coming in at that location. So based on those samples, all of them from top to bottom in Big Chico Creek and top to bottom in Butte Creek across 2025 dry season, so like April to October, none of those locations showed input of ground. So that's also indicating a disconnecting system. Okay, so we've learned some things about our creeks and streams. There's still some question marks, right? But the preliminary location pattern, I think we can say with some degree of confidence that Sacramento is connected and is gaining. And then these other creeks and streams largely look disconnected with some question marks, you know, between them in terms of their lower reaches as you move to the west. And so many central and eastern reaches appear disconnected much or all of the time. Connections may shift with hydrology and groundwater levels. So we can clearly demonstrate progress on this location question. We can also demonstrate progress on the timing question. And we've put in these new wells that will have data loggers in them. And that's really important. Okay, I already kind of talked through timing. Sacramento's already always connected. Big Chico and Butte Creek isotope data looks like they're disconnected. And the ephemeral streams where there's more question marks, we're putting in these new wells that will have data loggers and continuous data. And that's really what's needed to understand like where the water level is in the stream and where it is on a daily basis and how those are interacting and whether they're always connected or whether it's changing over time through the season. Okay, so that those new wells and new continuous data will be important to help fill kind of our remaining question marks, but we don't have that available to us yet. So this is what I just talked about. These are the locations just kind of to give you an idea. Newly installed wells are these blue diamonds. Here, right? So along Mud Creek, we try to choose these locations that are in these question mark areas, right, to give us more insight on what's happening in those stretches. Okay, so the volume is the remaining challenge, and this is least resolved and most dependent on DWR guidance and also on regional coordination, right? Because if our conclusion is Sac River is kind of our main event, we're not the only sub-basin affecting what's going on with Sac River. Obviously, Shasta Reservoir is part of that. So we should not tackle a Sac River alone. And those conversations kind of more regionally have begun, but that needs time to play out as well. There, yeah. So that is the background. So the straw man that is included as an attachment in your packet takes kind of this middle ground incremental approach, right? The more, you know, if you have two ends of the spectrum, you could wait and see and basically do almost nothing and just say, hey, we've learned some stuff and we're putting in new wells and we're just going to wait and see and we'll tackle this in the future. We could take this incremental approach, which is more
built out in the straw man and document the location and timing progress that we've learned, define kind of this broader monitoring network for ISW, but wait on volume and compliance monitoring. And then a more aggressive or immediate proactive approach would be select a compliance network, establish thresholds. That would be proactive, but it risks premature threshold setting without DWR guidance and without kind of this bigger regional conversation. But that's the spectrum of approaches that the GSAs could take in responding to DWR's recommended corrective actions and to document in the periodic evaluation. So you have the details of the strongman proposal in your packet, but it does a lot of what I've just said. It documents the location progress, it documents the timing progress, it defines this bigger network of available groundwater level wells that could be relevant to this topic, but it defers setting specific SMC and defining a RMS network. And it describes the regional work that is being talked about. And you're gonna hear more about that in the near future. There's gonna be a June workshop to kind of share more about what those regional discussions have been. And specifically this topic has been identified by the Interbasin Coordination Group as a topic that is most needed for them to coordinate on as well. And so kind of more of the details of that regional work will come out in very soon, but are also available in meeting notes on our website. Okay. We have, as you'll recall, we had, and I'm almost done, we had stakeholder meetings, as you remember, back in October last year, and met with environmental stakeholders, domestic stakeholders, ag stakeholders, and the local expert group. And one of the topics we talked to them specifically about, kind of three things: groundwater levels, interconnected surface water, and domestic well mitigation. We already talked about that last month. So we heard a number of things from those conversations. On the one end of the spectrum, it's move faster toward SMC, right? It's precautionary, set SMC sooner than later, raise thresholds to protect GDEs and ISWs, use ecological indicators such as valley oaks, urban canopy, and rooting depths to set thresholds and include early warning triggers before thresholds are reached. The middle path is essentially what's built out in the straw man. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the most cautious: proceed carefully, given the data gaps, wait for DWR guidance, maintain flexibility, and avoid locking in premature thresholds, coordinate with neighboring subbasins on ISW and modeling issues, and revisit the SMC when DWR guidance data sets are available. So we've heard kind of the full spectrum of input from different stakeholders. The common thread, I would say, is interest in refining the monitoring network, being transparent about assumptions, and being transparent about data gaps acknowledging those. Okay, so that's enough from me. This was written as an action item. If you wanted to make a recommendation to the board, you have the ability to do that in terms of how the agenda was set. You may also wish to wait. As I mentioned, it would be helpful to get your perspectives, questions, and then we might, as with the land subsidence, it was nice because there was an ability to kind of pull in different input and revise that straw man into a different proposal that then you were able to consider and move forward. We can do that with the ISW as well, or you could make a recommendation today, acknowledging that some additional public comments may come in that influence kind of the information that the board has available to them when they consider this topic. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All right. So questions now. We're going to take turns.
Do we even know what DWR, what their guidance is yet?
We don't. Then
why should we even vote to change things until we find that out? Until we find their guidance. I mean, because we could change something in post. Well, we don't need to do that.
Right. So that's one path. So
I look at it, until we have their guidance, we can't move forward and shouldn't move forward with any of this.
And I will say, I think there's two things that's helpful to say. There's kind of two pieces. What do we write about in the periodic evaluation? in terms of what the GSA has done or isn't doing? And then do you amend or not amend the GSP in light of that? And so right now the straw man says, let's document what we, you know, document these things in the periodic evaluation and don't change the GSP. Kind of for that reason.
So I also think that the LLMTs, you know, SMCs shouldn't be set yet because there's a lot of new data coming in, and especially that can address the shallow aquifer. And if you look at groundwater levels below Chico Creek, the Big Chico Creek, for instance, you might be looking at from the main aquifer, it's about what, 80 feet down. But if you look at the shallowest aquifer, it's only 10 feet down. So it should be connected, even though we're saying right now that it's not using older data, is what I'm guessing. Because we know that Big Chico Creek is very much associated with the shallowest aquifer system. Only 10 feet down, right up against Big. So whether that's a perch system or not, we need to learn more in order to work on this before we could say it's completely disconnected. If we go further and say we're aggressive now and say we've got to set these in, we're basically saying Big Chico Creek is disconnected from the groundwater. And I don't think it is. But we won't know that until we get further data and establish that. But, so for other reasons, I think I like the approach that you have. Is let's just continue with acquiring more data and come back to it with the guidance. I guess what I'm saying, rambling, is that I don't particularly want to go forward with what these data say right now until we get more.
So those three, are you looking at the three different?
Yeah, I mean,
so are the middle. You the show progress, the middle path?
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you have any questions for Christina?
For example, Big Chico Creek, there's a profile going across in on campus. It's such a young data set. In fact, they don't even have the numbers yet, but it's there. It will show that Big Chico Creek is connected, not disconnected, but is connected. So if we move ahead thinking that it's disconnected, then we're going to be setting some pretty straight SMC, right? So I think that's why we need to.
It seems like we had a presenter here, meeting before last, and he was talking about Lingo Chat. And I thought the indication was that as Lingo Channel fills seasonally, the wells surrounding it also tend to rise. Is that a separate issue with connectivity or?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think Lingo Channel, that's indicating it's at least losing, right? You're in a losing condition because those water levels are going up. So that's a recharge piece, yeah. But it's not necessarily connected. And I think with Lindo Channel, that's a good one to think about because it's dry, right? Like if water is not going into it from the top, from Big Chico Creek or from stormwater, it's dry. So it can't be connected. So that's kind of helpful.
Yeah. Susan has a question.
Yeah, I like the move.
Oh, we're doing questions.
Oh, questions. Okay. About the English, okay, on the one that's the first, move faster. Is there any way to, you know, like you had a friendly amendment to further explore like using ecological indicators such as values and urban chemistry and stuff to set fish? And keep that in mind for it into the community.
Yeah, so great question. I think the way that we are starting to think about groundwater dependent ecosystems and Valley Oaks is really putting them in the category of groundwater level sustainability indicator because they're dependent on the groundwater levels, right, that they have access to. So interconnected surface water could be relevant to GDEs
in the surface water corridor, really riparian along the surface water feature, or to groundwater dependent, you know, inflow to the stream itself, like fish. But Valley Oaks, we're going to talk about in kind of the groundwater level.
So that's another category later.
It's a, right. It's a different sustainability indicator, and it's coming next. Yeah. Yeah. So yes, to your question, but in a different topic.
All right. Any other questions from the chat for Christina? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to open this to public comment. Please raise your hand. Do you have any? Yes, okay. Please introduce yourself at the podium for the red line.
Bruce Smith. When I was at Chico State, I mean, it's Chico State, a long time ago, I measured the creek one of my classes, and there were, and I don't know if they're still in existence, there were monitoring wells on both sides of the creek. One Friday, I went out to measure, and it was raining hard. And I didn't want to measure because I thought I was going to get my notebook messy, which I didn't. But it was the best measuring day I could have picked, because when I started, upstream, there were wells on each side of the creek going down. Typically, the wells were almost exact opposites of each other, and the well on this side was about the same level groundwater as the one on the other side. When it started raining, the creek rose. I measured, and this side of the well rose proportionally to the depth of the creek. When I got to the end, because it took about an hour and a half to measure this thing, when I got to the end, the creek had dropped so that my wells on this side were this high, and when I came back, the creek dropped, they were this side. That creek is definitely connected to what? The shallow aquifer. There's no question about it. So any computer generation that tells me it's not is wrong. Now, when you're standing in a creek, Big Chico Creek, and the water level's this high, you're standing on the bottom of the creek, but you may be standing on the top of the aquifer. So in relation to the Mendo Channel, yes, it's dry unless there's water going through it. But if there are water elevations on either side of that, at what depth, how far below the bottom of, when you're standing on the gravel, how far underneath you is the water table? So this connection thing is really tricky, and it's going to be something, and I'm really happy with what you're doing today, but it's going to be something that's going to take a lot of intense interest, because how you define it is going to come back on how well this whole thing goes together, which is what you're working on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Public comment?
It's James Brobeck. The Brian at GSP states that groundwater-dependent ecosystems are defined in the CEQA regulations as ecological communities or species that depend on groundwater emerging from aquifers or on the groundwater occurring near the ground surface. GDEs, including the Chico Urban Forest, exist within the vine set base and where vegetation accesses shallow groundwater for survival. Without access to shallow groundwater, these plants and the ecosystems supported by the hydrology would die. On page 155 of the groundwater plan, it states, the objective of the interconnected surface water SMC, sustainable management criteria, is to avoid significant and unreasonable adverse impacts on the beneficial uses of the surface water. It goes on to say the distinction between an ecosystem's dependence on groundwater versus its dependence on surface water and the associated riparian zone or floodplain is important. Now, my interpretation of this distinction is that groundwater-dependent ecosystems and interconnected surface water are related but separate issues, and that the survival of non-riparian groundwater-dependent vegetation may be neglected if we only focus on interconnected surface water. Acquiring more shallow aquifer data can help us understand the complex relationship between these two goals. The BINUG groundwater sustainability plan reflects DWR's priority, which is managing surface water flow volume, not protecting non-riparian groundwater and vegetation. Our locally controlled GSP can and should protect both objectives. This flood management strategy would also protect domestic wells. Improving overall groundwater levels would improve interconnected surface water flow and connectivity. The BINA operating range measurable objectives are generally set at historic low aquifer levels. This is unnecessary. The SGMA legislation states, quote, an agency may establish measurable objectives that exceed the reasonable margin of operation and flexibility for the purpose of improving overall conditions in the basin. But failure to achieve those objectives should not be grounds for a finding of inadequacy of the plan. I would love to see a plan for our area that will improve groundwater conditions, improve stream flow, and protect our groundwater and ecosystems and domestic wells. I think local control insists that we do that and not just follow DWI's priorities.
Okay, so our questions have been answered, correct? So we are going to have discussion on this item and a potential recommendation if someone feels they need it. How long did it take for the Interbasin Coordination Committee to form and start working?
I mean, I guess thinking at least a couple of years.
Yeah, it's taken a couple of years. Yeah, it was pulled together in 2020.
Yeah, so at least that.
Yeah, it's morphed a bit since then, but yeah.
I'm using that as an example of why I'm concerned that if we go with a really do nothing approach, that kind of history will repeat itself. And then a lot of this does have to do with coordinating with the other basins, especially in regards to the Sacramento River. So I personally would say, let's work on that right now because we know it's going to take 5 years. That's how I feel. And then I really like the straw man proposal number 17. It feels like we are listening to DWR's edits to the document that you provided on slide 5 and is taking a little time with that based on the fact we have no guidance. That's my discussion. Does anyone else want to have some discussion?
Susan? Well, as I stated before in the wrong section, I don't think we should be in that. Oh, now we have rush and kind of different
things. So we have a little by little.
But I do remember. I'm glad they're going to address the whole thing about the rapids and urban forests.
So we have a lot of consensus today. Does anyone feel comfortable?
I'm not comfortable until we find out what DWR wants of us, the best management practice, to move forward and say we're going to do more than we're doing now. Because isn't just all men, you're putting in wells, you're doing other things. I think we need to wait for that guidance before we, because we have to be cognizant of the people, the farmers, the homeowners who are paying this. So it's not required by Sigma. We have to be careful with what money we're spending. So until we get what DWR wants, the best management practice, I think we should hold off doing it.
So the straw man describes basically what's already been done with the grant funding, and that is these analyses that I described today, and then installing the new wells of the grant. So the straw man doesn't propose anything beyond that.
Yeah, so she's saying the straw man doesn't spend any additional money. It's already been spent. I mean, they're documenting the problems.
And the stuff that's been paid for. And think of it too as the periodic evaluation piece. Part of it, you have to document what has been done, and that's in the periodic evaluation, and that's part of that set of
I'm still not bored to find out what DWR guidelines are and what they want. That's
I think that needs to go in the minutes.
If we're going to be, if all of our actions are going to be governed exactly what they want, what they don't want, well, what they do want is to show progress. They said that in very plain language, show progress from what we've already done. So if we don't show that progress, then we're going against DWR. And I'm not saying I'm a big do whatever DWR says person, but if you want to take that route, that's what they want. They want you to show progress. I think that's what the middle ground is.
So I think maybe to clarify what Greg's comment could actually mean in terms of relative to the straw man does include defining kind of the ISW broad network. So I think that's the piece that, like, we could show the progress, the straw man describes that, and it defines this broad network. So what I hear you saying is, finding the broad network.
Yeah, I don't like going through and committing ourselves to process these things without knowing what we legally have to comply with.
Yeah. But you're not opposed to the showing progress part, right?
What's that?
Because there is like the two parts. Are you okay with the showing progress?
Well, I think we can show the progress we have, but I'm not willing to commit to doing that all the time and more if we don't have to.
I'm definitely hesitant on trying to do anything about volume. As you identified three different criteria, location, timing, and volume, and I think that DWR is going to have some very specific guidelines around volume, and rather than take on that topic without the guidelines, we should wait so that we don't waste time and money. There are heads shaking in the green. So if there's a motion to but if you don't want to do a motion, we can have a motion to say, we're going to table this and we would like our discussion it relayed to. When you have that motion. You guys want to move on to the meeting or not?
Yeah. Well, I would like to just find a little bit more where it says proceed carefully under there. They're already doing that, like coordinate with neighboring subbasins. There's already some of that in the show process. So, you know, I think it's important to, you know, this is just taking the data we have and expanding on it. So when DWR comes up with something, people can say, oh, we have something to base it on instead of having to start new
I think we're just doing the background work. Eventually, this is going to have to be in the 3 months as we're going to find them. So, I think the show progress also has a lot of being careful.
Okay. So I have an idea. I'm going to throw this out here as a facilitator of the meeting. Slide 18 has three responses identified on a spectrum. There's from right to left, the most cautious, the middle, or the most proactive. What I'm suggesting we do is actually vote where we are right now. And you can vote for more than one. And we would start at the most cautious. And you would read this box, and if you agree with everything in that box, you would say yes in a vote. And then we would move on to the next box. And if you agree with everything in that box, you can say yes. And if then we would move on to the last box, meaning the most proactive. And if you agree with doing everything in that box right now, you would say yes. And then that way you would get a quantifiable number of where we all are on the spectrum. Would that work?
Let's give it a shot.
All right, well, that Evan has a comment.
I have a question just before we do that. Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
I just want to be really clear with the middle of the road path shown progress. What would we be committing to that we haven't already spent? We have grant funds and we haven't already developed research, we haven't already done, above and beyond just reporting out the progress that we have already made. And what would be a new commitment? It's what I'm seeing is we're really just providing an update of what we've done to help fill the database, right? We're deferring setting up any kind of sample management criteria, we're deferring the volume calculations and coordination with all the other data around us. In my mind, this is just an update that doesn't commit us to anything other than to monitoring network that we've already started to produce via the grants, right? Am I mistaken in any part of that?
I think that's right. I mean, even just defining the broad network doesn't commit us to anything. It's just saying, hey, these are wells that we found that have data and are useful, perhaps. So I'm just gonna take a look real quick at the.
I also think some of the things under pushing carefully can put in the show progress. And with show progress, we're still gonna be waiting to do your guidance. Even though it doesn't say that in show progress.
Yeah, that's why I was saying
I think the only commitment
it would kind of give you a picture of
the only commitment is the regional coordination piece. Like we should coordinate regionally once we get guidance from DWR.
Yeah, I
have
a team.
Other than that, there's no other really new commitment that's financially or otherwise effort.
So we have several options. We could just have our discussion documented. We could do just kind of a show where you are on the spectrum vote, or we can have a motion and move on.
Yes. Would it be helpful for me to summarize what I think the discussion is, and then maybe once you know that, it could say this is the discussion moving forward, just in case that's, since that was one of your options, if you tell me how that would go.
How you're going to document it?
Yeah, how I would document it.
Does that sound good to everyone? Okay.
So from my understanding, and I'm not going to use the names, but generally everyone agrees that we want to show progress. But where there is some pushback is part of the, if we want to include the, not the SMCs, but to include the update on the monitoring network. Everybody also agrees that we should not be setting SMCs at this time. Is that pretty accurate to the discussion?
That reflects what I heard. I'm open to anything.
And I'm sorry. Between the show progress option and the proceed carefully option, I don't see anything. These two could, nothing in there that's contradicting. Yeah, it's really a combination of it.
Proceed cautiously and show progress, not setting the SMCs.
Yeah. And I think that takes into account what Greg was saying. I really want to get started on entertainment food business, because I know how long it's going to take. And from what everyone else said, I think we're good. All right. Do I have a motion to move on to the next item?
So we're not going to make a motion about this, but
it sounded that everyone kind of shook their heads when she read back what the consensus was.
So then she'll just report that and report the timeline.
Correct, because the requested action was just discussion and a potential recommendation, and it sounds like the potential recommendation isn't here yet. No one made a motion.
Would it be helpful to make a motion to say to combine show progress and machine carefully into one box? To say that's what we're making the motion for, to not the blue box.
You can make that motion, and if there's a second, we'll move on the
road. I'd like to make a motion that we put forward the combined statements and show progress and proceed carefully into one recommendation. I think to bring that forward to the
okay, and then for clarification, because Greg is concerned about spending money, is there anything in that that is going to cause the agency more money to be spent?
Now we're in the future.
The only thing I could think of, again, Christine, let me know, it would just be staff time going to this information meetings, which we're already doing so. At this time, that's the only commitment financial-wise, but kind of have to do this on different topics as well. So it's not really specific to this topic, to this project.
Well, I just want to be able to say that if Sigma comes out, EWR says you only need to do this and this, that we should comply with that.
Right. Like at this time, we have the grant funds to say, like, here's the progress. And we have the grant funds to say, this is the network that we're working with. Anything beyond, like, we're not committing to anything beyond that in this. So
when those grant funds run out, you're still going to have the labor doing everything that you're saying you're doing.
Yeah, I would say, so there's that last bullet on the green, right? Collect new data. So the CalSIP stream gauges are being installed and the new wells are being installed. And I would say when the GSA approved installation of those, they are also committing to ongoing monitoring. So I think that's a GSA decision that's been made for those set of wells on those locations.
And it's in the budget. The cost of that is in the budget. And
so this,
and gathering that data will also be documented in an annual report, so there is already some of that commitment to do some things, not in addition above and beyond. Like Christina said, we've already committed to this, installing the stream gauges, that the CalSIP funding has installed, any new monitoring wells that have installed, our community monitoring network. Those are things that have already been committed to as part of the future grant funding or not, that's in your budget, and the budget that the board will be approving has been discussed previously. So
I agree, it's accurate to say there's no new commitment defined in here that this week.
People understand the motion. Okay. There's a motion, there's a second. Additional discussion? Seeing none, how about we call for a vote on the idea of bringing back the motion?
Todd made a motion that we put forward a combined response of the middle and the middle path and proceed careful path.
As a supported approach by the check.
All right, so that's the motion.
Greg Sonner?
No.
Samantha Lewis?
Yes.
Todd Green?
Yes.
Evan Murphy?
Yes.
John Preston?
Yes. Patrick Riley?
Yes.
Susan Trader?
Yes.
He's not in
Rock Creek. Yeah. Rock Creek's a non-voting one. If you want, I can mark it though, just to say it doesn't go towards the official like vote, but I can always put Rock Creek's opinion on it. Did you want me to do? Yeah, it's just going to be true.
Okay, moving on, we have two updates from staff. Just for timing-wise, approximately how much time do we need for the rest of the agenda?
Just 5 minutes probably for me on six. The next item.
5 minutes.
Okay. Well, seeing that we only have 10 minutes left and then we will continue item six. Update on the anticipated timeline for the Vital Ground Sustainability Plan periodic evaluation.
So just a verbal update. So your land subsidence and discussion today on ISW will go forward to the joint board meeting. Rock Creek and FINET will meet in June. And then the next big topic, which is multifaceted, right? It includes groundwater levels. It includes the GDE kind of aspect, new data. We are preparing currently a straw man for that. And the goal would be to kick that out on the street in the next couple of weeks. And then probably you all could talk about it here, kind of like today. You could decide whether you want to make a formal recommendation or if we want to give it more time to brew and bring it back. So our thought is that it could come to SHAC in June and boards in July for initial direction. And if needed, it could come back in July, SHAC, and board August. So that's the groundwater level topic coming to you soon. And then the other kind of hanging topics out there are projects and management actions, which we already talked to you some about that approach a couple meetings ago in April, and then water quality. Both of those are mostly just documentation in the periodic evaluation. So some more information will be coming out on those as well. And then our thought is to bring them together with kind of a larger periodic evaluation update topic. Likely at your July meeting. So we will update kind of a tentative schedule on the periodic evaluation webpage. And it's, you know, in flux as these conversations evolve, but that's the intent timing-wise. So I do want to just highlight there's a periodic evaluation webpage, which then has supporting document page, which is where the interconnected surface water tech memo is, the groundwater dependent ecosystem tech memo. We're going to add some more detailed information about the shallow monitoring wells and that data set, which fed into both of those. So we'll be pinging your email as things are new and available, but just keep an eye on those websites. That's great.
As Chair, please provide any summer vacation plans to Dylan so that we know in advance.
I'm going to Italy tomorrow. If you wanted to know, send me your fun ones.
Take me with you. Yeah. So that they can understand how that fits into their
Yeah, that's great.
I bet I don't give me a shame. I'm just going to vacation. Dylan's not good.
All right,
moving
on, item seven, the GSA program manager update.
So one of those updates is actually
It's for me?
Yes, just the environmental health.
Oh, my talking points on, the well ordinance, okay. Yeah, so the Division of Environmental Health is updating its water well ordinance, and they have, so there'll be things forthcoming. We'll provide updates to you. They do have a water well advisory group that meets, and that's where the public will be able to attend or provide input as they go through the process. There's also an internal technical group that both Christina and Kelly are participating in, just being able to bring things that are happening with the GSA, with regard to MTs, MOs, and all the things that might be applicable in the well ordinance update. So they'll be participating in that and reporting back if there are things that that need to come to the shack or to the biomedias as well. They're also doing the wastewater ordinance. Not sure if you're interested in that part as much, but at least what is that? Yeah, so it's for on-site septic systems, so updating that information on the process. So it'll be over the course of the next, I'll say, year and a half. They're hoping to have a draft well ordinance by the end of the year, but you know how those things go. But we'll just give you a chance to lose with that. And if there's anything that they need to bring back to that technical group, you see that what you want to do.
So do they need
The well advisory group, I don't know how often, but there'll be, we can send links to the websites. We'll put that in a, if you're on our listserv, we'll get links to that to you, but it will be on the department's, and links to that with you, on the department conference.
Environmental health.
Mm-hmm.
We can look it up.
Yes. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. But we can send it to you, Susan. We like to say everything's easy to find, but you know,
I guess it.
Then the other two items are for me. One is an update on interbasin coordination. So again, the different GSAs, neighboring GSAs have been meeting about monthly. Last time we spoke, I discussed a meeting in which we were going to have a workshop in person. I just wanted to give you an update that actually is going to change to a webinar just so that it doesn't become VINA specific, because it is for all of the basements around. We're currently, Christina, some of the topics that we're talking about there is that interconnected surface water. Also, we're coming up with one of the things we're hoping to come up at the end of this is a framework for interbasin coordination. So kind of coming up with what interbasin is going to look like over the next 5 years. So that should probably be coming out around June. Our hope would be, depending on time and when we have this public meeting, we might have a more thorough update in June, and if not in June, it's likely July. Though, based on timing wise, in case, like, say, we have a very busy day, we might put that off for that reason, so we don't have like a 4-hour meeting. And then also just want to highlight the fact that the website is looking great. And I'm not just saying that because I did it. Everybody else is doing the writing, but I think it's a really great resource. I just like to highlight that because I remember when I started this position and was trying to figure out all things groundwater, and now seeing it, I'm like, I could learn. We have a lot of fact sheets on there. We have a resources page. I think now that the projects are a lot of them coming to an end, there's more information on those. There's all of the different presentations, slides, technical memos. And then also just know that we're trying to send out more emails to the subscriber list to let everyone know, like, hey, this is all the things that are happening. So if you ever notice that maybe you're not getting any emails from the VINA GSA subscriber list, let me know. Usually I have you all on there, but maybe you unsubscribe for a reason, and you didn't need to. So keep an eye out for that. We've been doing a couple different public workshops. Not all of them are going to be recorded, but I think that a couple of them are. So in case you ever miss something, again, you can find this on the website. The periodic evaluation page is really good, but a lot of the stuff that's relevant is going to be on that home page.
And if you can't ever find anything, email Dylan.
Yeah. Give me a call.
Item number 8, SHAC future agenda requests. SHAC members may verbally request an item to be agendized at a future meeting. After stating what the item would be, a majority vote of the SHACs needed the management team to agendize the item. SHAC members may also submit requests in writing to the GSA general manager to bring forward to the SHAC for consideration of the agenda. Seeing none, we're moving on to number 9, adjournment. May I have a motion to adjourn to our next meeting, Wednesday, June 24th? Second? All right, all in favor?
All right,
thank you.
Was it, Joanne, did you second that? motion to adjourn, or was it Susan?
Oh, you guys just sounded the light. You guys just y'all sounded the light.